Welcome to this podcast, The First Lady of Germiston, Life According to the Chaotic Order of Viv Vermaak. Who is Viv? Well, she's an award-winning spokesperson and acclaimed journalist with an eclectic point of view of the world around her and an even more unique way to walk through life. I sit down with Viv throughout this podcast series as we chat about her ethos of quote-unquote dismotivation and how she embraces the chaos. Enjoy. Just gone through a little bit of a mini journey here, going nowhere slowly, so to speak, up Viv Vermaak's roof top. Quite a nice, no, I'm not going to lie, just it's a scene. Yeah, you go ahead, tell me why you brought me up here.
Okay, I have to describe to people listening that this climb up the roof was like the man pretending he's climbing Kilimanjaro. You should have seen the drama here and oh my God. But here he is on the roof.
You mean me?
Yes.
I thought you were telling me like some kind of anecdote about some fake TikToker.
No. The man did it. He climbed up the ladder and up the roof, but not without some slight protestation. But can I ask you something? What's it like being on the roof?
For me, it reminds me of not being allowed to go on the roof as a kid. And I guess you want something more profound. I'm not a adventurist like this, climbing up a roof, going up Kilimanjaro, I don't know, driving slow.
Well, what I do think, and I share that with you, that it is a bit of a buzz. Look, it's like putting some Tabasco sauce on your eggs, maybe, that degree of buzz. And for me, now trying to assess the enormous changes in my life and this country that I've witnessed from this roof over many decades, because you can see into other people's yards and you start thinking
you're a pariah.
Yeah, you see, it's naughty.
Social, cultural, personal pariah.
Oh, am I now banished? That's fine. Okay, so what you can see and the sense of perspective it gives you from living in this country. So when I was small on this roof, you would see all the gardens had the fruit trees, which you can see now in the back. So there's a mulberry tree, a fig tree, an apple tree. And then there's the neighbor's peaches also hung over the wall. And these houses were built before the Second World War with the thought of that you could feed each other when there wasn't food. So that's why these lawns are so big and enormous and everybody has fruit trees. Now, if you look across the road, you can't see them there. But in that yard, you can see the big yards have become rooms for rent. People don't want fruit trees, they want a place to stay.
Yeah.
So the three-bedroomed houses are now being transformed 21-roomed living quarters. So across the road, there's 40 people living there.
For real?
For real. So that's...
Did you see this from the roof, or did you go and visit? Did you see 40 people go out to work?
You don't see it like that. But what the interesting thing is how the landscape has changed. So you go to sleep in a suburb, and you wake up with one foot in the township. But that is the needs of the country.
Right.
And the migration, if you take time to look at it, is quite extraordinary, because first it happens slow and then it happens fast. So the people that used to live there were Italians, they're now Mozambicans. The people on the corner were Poras, and now there are Somalians staying there. So it's an extraordinary migration, and for me, it's not necessarily one I wanted, but for them, for all the other people in the street, it's a massive move forward.
So what did you find from their own realities?
From the realities, let us say, sometimes you don't have to draw a conclusion, but it helps to give perspective. So let us say we're now on the roof, it's only 5 meters higher than normal, but now you zoom out into the sky and you watch the whole planet.
Gotcha.
Now you go, okay, hang on, we have all these 8 billion people. Now zoom back in time. 117 billion people have ever lived. That you get a sense of perspective. And don't try to make too much of it, just have a sense of awe and wonder.
I was going to say, because once you get perspective, you have to do something with it. Do you, should you, would you?
Sometimes you don't. You just stand in awe.
Okay.
Awe. And if you can't inspire that awe in yourself, you can listen to a song. Now, there's a famous Monty Python song that when I'm at my most mad, I play, and then it makes me feel better. Just remember that we're standing on a planet that's revolving.
Revolving at 100 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour, the galaxy we call the Milky Way. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth.
And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space, cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
Word. In the corner. Oh, come on, open. Come on, gee. I wasn't kidding. I'm gonna get out. How the hell did she open the door? Nope, is that right? Nope. Still not right. Nope, I'm missing all the action. Come on, Chris. Wow, okay. This is not child-proof, it's...
Now, they see when you're suspicious. Too quick! That looked. They'll just drive by surreptitiously. Because I do like dodgy things on the poles.
We're
That's
not
how
taking...
we do it in this street.
This street is being?
Mons Road. This is how we do it in Mons Road. You just do your own thing.
Currently driving.
Yo, that looks a bit more busy than when you would see on other poles. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, the pole itself?
Yes.
How would you just tell? More wiring or just more, I say,
more
assault?
Activity. And the unmarked vehicle, for instance. So now as we're driving, so you just see that was a bit more like a cry nest. And then we go past this house. We've actually done it quite nicely.
Yeah.
Let's see that, and then you'll see there are extra wires.
I'm learning skills here.
No, you have to. See, there are six wires. Oh, shit, eight. Okay. So that means they're laying wires directly from the pole to the back of the house to bypass pesky things like the council
payment.
And things. Yes, pesky things like payments ought to be avoided. And those are, by the way, also the people who hijack the street.
Nice.
But you have to admire the spirit. I just decide, fuck you.
What's the point of being South African unless
sure.
you can.
Let's see if we can get away with this. Yeah. And nobody did anything. So, oh, well, that's cool.
Well, you drove past like a responsible citizen.
Yes, I went like, look there. Now, I'm going to do something ridiculous because we can.
No. Are you going to drive on pavement?
Yes, I'm going to drive over the pavement.
Oh, word, I was just joking.
Go ahead. So these cars have extraordinary suspension. Now, we've just gone over a pavement, driving over those circles, those big ones, right? That's supposed to separate old suburbs, and we're just going over it. And you can feel the smoothness of these American car suspension.
Yeah.
And when you're drunk, but I'm not doing it now, then you go around in circles around the trees. But we're just going straight across because we...
It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
If we come back at 10, maybe there. You hardly felt it. Brrr.
Nice.
So these are urban adventures.
Mm-hmm. Like you almost speak. And there we go. Toot that horn. If I could resonate, you know, the experiences of my life as a holistic human being, then fine. I'm not trying to be Buddha. I'm not trying to be anything like that. I'm just sick and tired of kind of hitting shallow brick walls. So that was
amen. I think that the sick and tired of hitting shallow brick walls is a very important thing to be aware of. And then people chase it to fill it with different things. Just as we're traveling, as the captain of this vessel, that has started raining. So now it's a great opportunity for us to see if the wipers are working.
Nice.
Let us see. In this car, everything is always 50-50. So it's going to work or it's not going to work. Either way, you have to be fine with it and deal with it. Let's see what's your vote, that they will work or not.
I'm optimistic, which is absolutely not my style.
Okay, so let's switch it on and we go and...
Yay! Nice. You knew there was it.
Oh. Sorry, people are always hooting at me. I'm not always sure whether it's acknowledgement or because I'm driving in a straight way, but you just hoot back.
Oh, look, there they go. Nice. Oh, they actually acknowledged you in a nice way.
Yeah. So they're telling me he's on radio.
You're on radio.
You're on radio.
Say hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Yes.
Nice guy.
Beautiful.
Nice, man. Cheers.
What's amazing about this car now, and it's so ridiculous, and I think in some ways it does fill a gap for many people, because it doesn't matter where you go, people will hoot, and it will, for some other reason it brings them joy, and I haven't figured out why. So I've been with this car to Soweto, and there are four-year-old children who have never seen a car like this, but they stop and they gape at the thing. So there's something about cars in general, and the aesthetic of old cars, that make them meaningful to people. Mm. And I don't know why, but it is meaningful. The car aspect, as the transporter of the journey, now becomes a very spiritual thing in some sense. Because for humans, with all of these allegories, and we understand that life is a journey, and this is the thing that carries us through the journey. Do you have a special car that you liken to a growing period or a defining period in your life? I'm going to face...
One that I've owned.
Yeah.
That was my first car, my Sentra, which my parents gave to me. The exhaust had yellow fumes, not any other fumes. There was like sulfur going out in there. The paint had completely worn off in the front, on the sides. You know what? I was so resourceful with that car. How many times in neutral? How many times I would only go routes that would go downhill?
Yes.
Like, you know.
And your left foot could do all pedals at the same time.
Oh my word, that car was. Why I didn't blow up in that car? Well, like, we both didn't internally combust at the same time. We had some kind of relationship.
But that's not important, because now that car becomes a symbol of great hardships that you've overcome with creativity and ingenuity. True. So that's why cars are unusual. So this car, and our brains are wired for novelty, and sometimes old things become new.
Yeah.
Because now already you felt that this car doesn't break in the smooth way that one is accustomed to. The wipers go clang, 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 and they don't work quite as well. The space that you're sitting in feels luxurious.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's so big, but there are no cup holders. There's no aircon, so when it's hot, it's hot. When it's cold, it's cold.
Yeah.
So this car engages you in a slightly different way. And like me, you like sitting on my roof, it just gives you a slight edge on a different perspective on a familiar journey. And I think maybe for me, that's what the appeal is.
You want to keep the car?
I'm going to keep the car. I'll probably sell it at some stage out of desperation, or just when I've stripped my mirror one more time. But the value of this course, I don't think it's financial.
Yeah.
It does a subconscious...
Of course.
I don't know what... sometimes you mustn't explain it. But I do think the appeal of going there slowly was that it was in these cars.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't in these cars, I wonder if there would have been a show. It literally, everything you do is 50-50. It's going to work or it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Either way is valid.
Statistics.
Press the button, turn the ignition and put petrol and go. That's how it works. And if you get into the car with a sense of, oh God, something's going to break, it will be terrible. But if you enter with a spirit, and I think that is what living in Africa is about, the sense of uncertainty, but not having it terrifying. So when you can embrace chaos in that section without being annoyed, and okay, if I get stuck in the traffic and the car overheats, then I wait for an hour, how are you going to deal with it? And I wonder if the car has taught me about being an African or being a Buddhist.
Okay.
But it's calmed me the hell down, because you can't live in the constant tension of having everything go your way. So I think it has taught me that lesson, and I don't think I would have learned that lesson if it wasn't for this vehicle.
I mean, that's a. Is it because it's a stage in your life? Like, is it an age thing or experience thing, or is it a car thing with the experience? Like,
I have no idea.
I get that this is a nice... I mean, it's a good benchmark to then obviously pivot your narrative from and stuff, you know?
Now listen, I'm taking you now.
Oh, where?
We now paused some Scotty camps we buy. It's often breaks up.
Oh, yeah,
but
okay,
it's
yeah.
It's not today, but I'm taking you because this is also Germiston as we know it. And I'm taking you to Daisy DeMelka's old house, as far as I could research.
Hold on a second. No, hold on.
That's why we're here.
We've had...
why I break suddenly to find the direction.
When you said, you know, let's talk about Daisy DeMelka, like, within my family, it's a running joke. No. Is she a real person?
Yes.
Was she a real person?
Yes, dude.
It's been a running joke in my family as a reference to Daisy DeMelka as being And I don't, you know what? Okay, apparently she was not an attractive human being. And what?
Listen, me and Daisy, people often tell me, you take that back, people often tell me that my style is the same as hers. So Daisy de Melke was our first serial killer as a female in South Africa.
Wow.
She lived in Germiston, so to us she's like a more of a celebrity. So I'm taking you to where she stayed at the time of her arrest.
Okay. She a serial killer, 80s I'm guessing. 60s, 70s, doesn't matter.
No, I love you, we're talking 20th century. She was the last person that was hanged in Joburg. No, she was about... No, dude, did you really not know it was a real person?
It's such a catchy name, Daisy de Melke.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a cartoon character of a graphic novel.
She became a cartoon character. But she was eventually convicted only of poisoning her son, but we suspect... earlier children that she had, two small children and a few husbands, might also doubt of her, but she could only be proven, or she was only convicted of poisoning one, and she brought the poison in Bertram's.
Not good for a street cred.
I don't know why. Now, what's more fascinating to me in Daisy de Melke is why we think she's a hero, but maybe that's sweet Germiston, because she's so famous.
Okay.
And some of us with deep Hitler's feminist agendas goes, yeah, Daisy, you go, girl. And that she stuck to her guns, but she never gave up, and she became an expert.
How does the feminist action move against killing her kids?
Can't just be men who kill people and fuck them husbands.
Those kids, apparently. Why not?
Kids, what's up with all these kids?
She got a taste for blood. Look, it sounds so stupid.
No, it's fascinating that us in Germiston think she's some kind of hero because she's famous. So at least we have somebody famous coming from our town. And we just drove past the factories earlier where the listeriosis broke out. So this is amazing.
What's the listeriosis?
Don't you remember listeriosis when all the polony was fought? It was there.
I don't eat polony.
Okay, well, the polony was fraught for a while, and it broke out in a factory, and it was that factory we drove past.
Nice.
People went on a polony panic for some reason, and nobody ate polony. Were the Amaguinha for a while, but we just chowed it because we've been living here for years. What's a bit of fraught polony in this town?
Did you not suffer the consequence of listeriosis or whatever? Sounds like a Harry Potter chant. Yes. Listeriosis.
Yeah, no, we just tell you, point your finger at the polony three times and you go, listeriosis, listeriosis, listeriosis. Then you shop.
And suddenly nothing more happens, but you don't go to the toilet basically afterwards, you know? Look, I mean, I thought we were desperate for icons in 2023. But
who's going to compete with Daisy de Melke?
No, that woman
is so famous, you didn't even know she was real.
I must have gotten to the point where I thought this must be a real person. But again, it's such a fantastic name, Daisy de Melke. And again, I did not know she was, look, not to carry on about it. Her fame was apparently in my family, and our folklore was about her large level of unattractiveness.
The photo they take of you just about before you're about to get hanged isn't the best profile shot ever taken. Let's also be fair about that.
No filters.
If I told the woman, smile a bit of lipstick, but you're quite dickbat just before you're about to be hanged, so she didn't look happy. And nobody told her to comb your hair or something.
Yeah.
They just sent her through the gallows without any, like, art direction.
Poisoning adds 20 years to your life.
It does.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, I'm very excited.
I'm just looking for the house now because my rearview mirror also stopped working, but it's fine. I'll just lean out here.
So does someone live in this house?
Yes, it's an old mining house because Germiston was built on gold.
Oh.
So all these old houses were mining houses, and her one husband, the Melke, he was a Springbok rugby player. So, and the other one was quite high up in the mining industry. Oh, Sydney de Melke. That was the rugby player.
Okay.
And then I think her husband was a mine manager, so they had a little house.
I'm very excited to learn more about it. Like, I mean, as we're going on, to a certain extent, you know, people are like, okay, But the fact that
she... She did a strange thing. She wrote a play about her life. She's a bit like... he's a guy that murdered his wife, Simpson, and then pretended he didn't, but wrote a book. O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
She had a bit of that. And she was apparently a good writer. People are like, that's interesting that you're writing this play that has similarities to real events which you deny.
I am so... I'm spotlighted with learning, and I'm not being sarcastic. I'm not no sure as even in like a professional screenwriter. That's great.
Yeah.
Did it ever make it to the State Theatre? No,
it didn't. But I mean, this. So now you can understand the mind of this person. And you're talking about pivoting narratives. Yes, sir. She pivoted that thing into its mur in there. Look. Yeah, fuck it, dude.
It's kind of one note, friend. I mean, like, her life's kind of one.
I have to fucking stop now. This,
while we get there, new chapters in your life, were they traumatic? I mean, as you moved along, like,
how did you gravitate
through that?
Look, I think I have many new chapters in my life, but the 50-50 rule still applies. That I claim I got from the car in a way I couldn't get from a Buddhist or an Kierkegaard Germany. That it's either going to work or it's not, and either way, it's valid.
It's the rise and fall of basically everyone.
Of the journey, yeah, 100%.
So
these things are sufficiently terrifying that they energize you in a direction which you convince yourself is forward.
Yeah.
But track it. What is direction in the great scale of the universe? It's just movement.
This particular part is massive because. It was a career thing. It's a house thing.
I had to sell my house under circumstances I wasn't particularly in the mood to, but that's fine. And I lost my job. And my family is going under extraordinary turmoil, partly because of the decision I took. So Ola says, no, the universe gave me 1 year that everything just changed.
So why
so it's
move
a blessing
forward?
And a curse. Forward is a matter of interpretation.
Okay, fair enough. So
people should be cautious of platitudes, and change is as good as a holiday. You know, sometimes change is shit.
So the platitudes we understand seem to, it's like a stagnant existence, right? I get that. But I mean, some people don't know whether. Like stagnation might be a safe route for the moment.
But why do you want to be unsafe? So we must be very careful to romanticize these things. And also, when you speak to people, they're cautious. Why are you asking the question? Right. Change is not always good.
No, it's
sometimes it's very shit.
You can't just tell some people
go to a new house or a new place; it's going to improve. No, sometimes it's shit. Sometimes you go into a war. Sometimes you go into poverty. Sometimes you go into desperation. So I do think, so just be cautious that the act of change isn't necessarily the good thing. If you go into a better environment, it's good. If you go into a shit environment, it's shit. So just be cautious just to romanticize that novelty always brings something better. So that's what I'm saying. Whether it's good or bad, I'm still moving. Whether the wipers work or not, you're still moving.
With your attitude, your mindset, I get that, I understand. There must be fear that you are clearly, I mean, from what I understand, managing quite well, anxiety, the unknown, I get that. Like, have you had, just in terms of this?
Oh, massive. I wake up at night, almost every night with nightmares.
What type of nightmares?
So no, because I'm saying goodbye to a house that I've lived in for 50 years, and I've cleaned a room that I haven't cleaned for 20 years. So whatever the conscious or subconscious part of that is, sometimes you wake up with a nightmare that you don't have a place, and I just get up and I go and stand in that place, and I say thank you to that place for giving me the nightmare, okay. Even though I don't understand it. And these things are complicated. That's what I'm saying. Be very cautious to just tell people, oh, well, new adventure, new life. Yeah, maybe, but sometimes it's a terrible adventure.
Yeah, I don't care for that. Yeah. What do you define as existential loss? When I say your own, I'm saying you have lost in life. Not lost like you've lost a loved one or you lost a job, but you feel lost existentially in life.
Yo, from pivoting narratives to existential loss, this is tough. Now, I'm not sure I can answer that question, but I think a universal answer would be a loss of self, and that concept of authenticity, which we experience on Going Nowhere Slowly. So when you lose that...
How have you? Come on.
I don't know if I've ever found it. It's been a naturally... thing. Yes, I have lost it, and I lost it in the past 4 years, and I found it again, sort of.
How did it feel like?
I felt shit. That existential dread...
Besides shit, I'm almost like... I'm not saying it's an astral experience. It's not. It's your out-of-body experience, in-body experience, turmoil. I don't know, that's...
Yes, you've just described it. Well done.
Oh. I mean, those experiences are not fleeting.
Like, no, they're not fleeting. But if you talk about existential loss, and your great psychologists like Gabor Mate and those guys will talk about authenticity. But, you know, it's like this ephemeral concept that it sounds so great, but what the fuck does it mean? Mm. So for me, it's just a process of awareness, and awareness and celebration, regardless of what it is that...
Do you think,
that you find.
Do you think it's valid or justified for someone to say like they feel like nothing?
Yes, and they are nothing. So if you feel like nothing, so sometimes that nothingness is a sense of sensual deprivation because you've open-dopaminized yourself with the wrong things. So it's a deadness that expresses itself as a physical feeling. Then you do something like exercise or meditation or that stuff. But there is a sense of meaninglessness that people experience nowadays because life is too easy. So that's another thing, because we don't have to survive anymore, which is why I'm grateful for these giant and traumatic events, because suddenly you feel alive. It's very shit.
It's true.
But yes, you feel alive.
Very much.
And nothing brings you to life like a near-death experience. So we need these great traumas for us to feel worthy of the air that we breathe in. And the push to living your best life, and that will ultimately backfire because your best life will make you unhappy. Because we need trauma, we need drama, we need things to go wrong for us to feel that life is worth it or that we deserve it.
Yeah, so existential loss is definitely, I can write an encyclopedia ebook on it. And you, for me, it's about recognizing what emptiness truly, like tangibly, feels like when your soul is ripped, but you don't know where the fuck it is. It's out of you, and all
no,
you
that's
are
a,
is
no,
there.
These are terrifying concepts.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I've gone to enough dark places to basically buy a beach house there. And say this is my vacation. Yeah, you know, and that's cool. I get that. I find them extremely draining, and
sure.
Because they're not just a day that you're doing the whatever Two Oceans Marathon. It's one of those things that you really have to pace yourself. But if you identify where you are, you know what you're doing. You know what's happening to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that makes it better.
Yeah, that's how you get. That's how you get through it. Lekker. This is something else.
44 Stanley, not one Stanley, Chris. You should have corrected me.
Yeah, because I knew Daisy DeMalco was a real person. Here we are. This is crazy. The house.
This is amazing.
Yeah, the house does genuinely
now
look like.
Understand. So this was the mind made.
Something out of
house.
How to Kill a Mockingbird. This is crazy, yeah. That is spooky. I just want to kind of describe to you. So there's this like. It genuinely looks like a haunted house, melodramatic feel. There's this very, very suspect, like, on the side. I don't know what it's that stainless steel kind of warehouse. Ooh, I hope the owners do not come out and like, arrest us or drag us in for tea or coffee. It's just quite something. How do you feel now that you've
this is amazing because... Daisy is such a big part And that because at the time, I went through such a hell of a history to go and find her, and the Germiston Historical Society, and there was murder of arguments about where this woman was and how important and why do I think she's so important. So this is now a big part of history to me that we've now solved. And I'm glad that we could close that narrative loop.
There you go.
Especially with a guy that I didn't really, that I didn't understand, really didn't think the woman was real. So, okay, well.
It's this cool is amazing. Name. It sounds like a Disney villain.
Okay, the woman police are going to stop us.
Oh, she is going
she
to
is actually brutal, going to stop dude. Us.
She's going to be brutal. Like, they are the ones that.
Good morning.
How are you, ma'am?
Good, and you, my lovey?
Good, thank you.
Do you like our car?
Yes, I do. I saw you guys taking pictures there.
Yes. Do you know, in the history of Jemison, there was a lady called Daisy DeMelka. Have you ever heard of her?
No.
100 years ago, she used to be a serial killer. She poisoned 3 of her husbands and I think 3 of her children. And she was living there at that house we were taking pictures of when she was arrested. So in Germiston, she's famous.
Really?
Yes.
What's her name?
Daisy DeMelker.
Daisy DeMelker.
Oh. You haven't heard of Daisy DeMelker?
No.
Because you're young. Because from my generation, she was very famous because she could do this terrible thing. And she bought the poison from Spalkin's chemist. There's a branch in Germiston, but in Bertram's. And she was in the news all over the place.
Wow. So you're busy with that story now?
Yes, because he's visiting Germiston, so I said to him, I'll show him all our main attractions. And I'm sorry for us, but for Germiston, Daisy DeMelker is number one.
Oh, my word.
Okay.
When you were small, ne, what stories did you hear that they told you that person was so bad and you thought, yes, like, this is a person that will catch us?
I can't remember, eh?
Ankie Swimmers? What stories in your... Ankie Swimmers?
Ankie Swimmers.
They always told us if you're naughty, Ankie Swimmers will catch you. Or Daisy DeMelker will catch you.
Ooh. So that was the house?
Yes. But she had 5 husbands, or many husbands, so she had just the one. But that was the house that she was arrested in. And then they hung her by the neck till she was dead in Joburg.
Oh, she got the death sentence.
Yeah, she was the last woman to be publicly hanged.
Oh, wow, interesting.
Yeah. So what is your name, my lovey? Doctor. We were just stopped by police. Is also a doctor.
Holy
shit. That's my initials.
Oh,
D.R.
Whitecomb. I like your teeth.
Thank you. All right, enjoy.
Thank you, my love.
Be safe.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay.
Cheers. You do have this car.
Do you understand?
Yeah, I mean, this is like...
It's a genie in a bottle,
dude.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Damn.
But also, I don't behave like this in other cars. Other cars are very fucked. By the way, you can't see this, but I did make sure I had a noticeable thing in my roller. But you can try it, but you have to find something else.
A noticeable what in your bra? Boob.
A potential bribe.
Oh.
No, you must always...
I have my bag with me, but it's always...
Yeah, the bra is more visible.
I love when a woman pulls notes out of her bra. Like, you know...
Yeah, for your purpose, that's nice.
No, I'm just saying, it's quite... I like that I kind of, like... It's a lot of character.
While I raise the topic, the topic of bribing cops... I'm very expert at it, and I don't have a moral problem with it.
Of course not.
It's a lifestyle choice, and please don't judge me for my lifestyle choices. I don't look down upon other people.
There's no judgment.
I don't know what. There's something on your face. But anyway, so my take on it is this: the cops stop you, right? You know you've done something wrong. You give them the money directly instead of it going through all the red tape, and you've learned your lesson. So where's the harm done there? I'm always wrong when they stop me. They get some money, they do their job, and I learn a lesson. Except it cuts all the red tape and bureaucracy out of the system. So it's just a cheaper way of law enforcement, bribery.
That's what you think, but you know what? There are many other ways that we are schneid out of money from the SAPS. like fines that you pay 1,000 times but are never taken off the system. I'm sorry, that's for me, my number one.
That's what I'm saying. Avoid it going onto the system in the first place. Pay the bribe before the ticket gets written. The middle of Germiston, who is now largely occupied by people who hijack buildings. So they just go to a building. That's very interesting. So they just go to a building. So there's gangs operating. They go to a building where there are tenants, right? So they simply tell the tenants, from now on, you're paying me the rent. The tenant pays them the rent. Meanwhile, they don't own the building. Owner of the building comes back and there's a gunfight. So when the riots happened here, the July riots, this town, this part of town was very much...
This July riot?
You remember the July of the July of the 2 years ago July? The July riots, the famous July riots. It spread in KZN and in flashpoints across...
Oh, right, yes, 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 I remember that.
So
yes.
So when things, something like that happens, all the people tend to solve problems with violence and extortion, then join the fun.
Wow.
So then it was a lovely...
So at the moment right now, these buildings are...
Many of them are hijacked.
Yeah.
So, and even the business model is that you will bring people, let's say from Natal, in buses, because you have cheap place for them to stay in Joburg.
Okay.
For them, they're coming to Joburg because they have a place that's closer to the center of town where money is, and they have a place to stay. And they pay the money. So they don't understand the place that they're staying is not, doesn't belong to the guy that's taking the rent.
Who wins the gunfight?
The crooks. Because some of the people who own the buildings then go the legal route, but by that time it's too much effort. You just literally abandon the building.
Wow.
And what happened to the inner cities, and it's not just Germiston. I think people do think it's just Germiston because we made it to the front page of the Citizen. But look how terrible the town has become. But it's part of the slumification of inner cities worldwide. And again, we're old enough to have seen it. When we were small, you go to town and you dress up because the jeweler is there, the baker, and all of that stuff. As people, the...
Hello, Mr. Boss, I like your car. It's an old one.
It's
yes.
Old.
It's a beast, this one.
It's beast.
There you go.
So then what happened?
Cat called basically three times.
No, at least.
One by the cop, one by the other dude. Nice.
So now, inner cities, then when the cities now became the de-ruralization of, as we became more people, you go to the cities, there's money. Then eventually the rich people start moving away because the poor people follow the money. So the rich people start going to the suburbs or to neighboring towns. Mm-hmm. Then eventually only the poor people stay in the city, and the invention of shopping centers as a single location for all your shopping, whereas in the past you would have to walk from the baker to the candlestick maker, the jeweler.
Right.
So shopping centers killed inner cities, and then the rich people bugger off because they don't want to be seen in the same place as the poor.
Yeah.
And the poor go, okay, well, there's space now, then we move in. And this is now just how the modernification of humans across the world from the 60s has caused this phenomenon. Whereas the rich used to be in the center of town, now the poor.
The
when you don't know how to drive in this place, boot and go.
Then
they just do that.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I don't know how to drive, so the fuck don't you?
If you hoot, it's like praying for your sins. It's like saying Holy Rosary, you just forgive yourself.
This is so funny.
So then you'll see, but that's why I feel, for me, Germiston is an exciting place. Because Germiston is the truth of South Africa. Now, my street is the truth of Germiston in one street.
And that
is where I find it so fascinating. If only I wasn't living there. But it is everything in this country, and it played out in that condensed form in 4 months in the street that I grew up in, and I find it very invigorating in a horrifying way.
I want to end this particular conversation with that. If you can tell me everything is good until...
Everything is great until the lights go out. And then people show their true colors. And you will do things and understand things about people you live with you which you have never known. And for the first time in 20 years, and people have lived here for 20 years, they've never spoken to each other. And we all have to meet on that street corner at the substation to decide what to do about the electricity.
Is this bigger, again, narrative? Some showmanship for the life around us?
This is how the world works, and this is how South Africa works. And what will happen as the power slowly goes out for the whole country?
Mm.
What happened in Mons Road with the canary in the gold mine? Because those conversations that nobody knew how to have, the difficult conversations about around the substation, I can tell you now, that's the way it will go for the whole country.
Mm.
Because groups start forming.
Yeah.
And your first thing is to do, whether you think it's right or not, is to look for the other white people. But there are very few of them.
Okay.
So it becomes a numbers game. That's the one group. So the white people tend to come at the electricity problem in a way that's formalized and structured and according to the law. And the council must come and sort this out, and we must sign a petition.
Does that work? No.
Not in the street, because we don't have its numbers. Other people had a sensitivity about this obsession with what is legal and not. So the word legal and illegal became offensive,
okay.
Which is strange for people coming from, who stood for the DP as a councillor. So we're like, what do you mean? It's not illegal. The system is overloaded. So my way of upbringing, where you're very individualized and taking responsibility on an individual level, is strange to them because they have a group culture. So you would rather say the system is overloaded, not you are the one with illegal connections. So you mustn't point fingers. We're all in this together. The street is overloaded.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not used to having that conversation, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Because everything you say is seen as an assault or something racist or offensive. So you have to recalibrate. So then that group forms. Then the people who do the midnight power switches and basically are the entrepreneurs of the world who are privatizing Eskom without consent. They're literally putting in, go to the substation, put in new circuit breakers, put in new cables, as we've seen.
Yeah.
They can't understand why the legal and the illegal group are even arguing. When in his hand,
he's got
a 4,000 rand answer if we just pay him. You can't understand why we even talking about it.
One last hooch for good luck.
I'll just do it again. Okay. So they can't understand why we're arguing. The council now strips its moor because the electricity entrepreneurs are prone to chasing the council workers away because they don't want to be interrupted. So the council responds as would be normal. Said, we're not going to come and help you in your street because your people are rude and you fiddle with the electricity. So now you sort your own self out. So now we're on an island. Mons Road is like walking off the gold standard. We're literally off the grid. We're not in control of our own electricity. Now you understand what's going to happen if Eskom fails. This will happen. The privatization of Eskom will happen in an anarchic way like it happened for us. And you have groups now pushing back against this, but we don't have the numbers. The men go silent. The men refuse to get involved. The women fight the battle.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And I'm telling you, that is what will happen. So then you have the groups, the little alliances that form in such a strange way. And I think for me, when I realized, and I thought these people are stupid, they're not thinking it through clearly until you realize they are. When you're in a survival situation, you make decisions differently and you make different decisions.
Yeah.
When stability gets taken away from you, in our case, the thing that runs economies always is a stable energy grid. When that stability goes, people become different.
Yeah.
Because you can't predict the future. A hunter will think of a situation differently to a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
A hunter doesn't sit on the stoop and wait for rain. You wait, and if there's an opportunity, you go for it.
Yeah.
It's almost like an old car. It's 50-50. Whereas a farmer needs predictability and stability. So when you take away stability from these people for 3 months, and the council has now said, we're not helping you.
Yeah.
You make different decisions. So a breakthrough for me in my thinking and why I was behaving the way I was. There was a lady, and she's a white lady, and she was signing petitions against the illegal connections in the morning. That afternoon, she was collecting money for the stock fell, for the extortion scheme.
Oh.
So I was going, what the fuck, Aniki, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Can't you see
yeah.
that you are contradicting yourself?
Polarized.
And she says, no, Vivian, what moet ek doen? Wat wil jy hê moet ek fucking doen? My ma is sick. Ek het nie elektrisiteit nie. Die regering gaan nie kom nie.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And I realized in that instant what she was doing wasn't hypocritical or even bipolar.
Yeah.
She was simply keeping her options open, which is the correct thing to do if those are your only options. And now you understand when people in this country who has lived for instability, the instability of no jobs, no water, no infrastructure, have a group way of thinking of the world.
Yeah.
And they don't have the luxury of thinking ahead because there isn't an ahead.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Of course.
And it's a survival reaction
yeah.
that's gone on for so long that it's become a cultural way yeah. of thinking about things. And that was a great freedom for me that I was so shocked. I don't know what shocked me more, that I changed my mind, or that I understood it so quickly, or that it took 55 years for me to understand it overnight.
Yeah.
But now I understand the most of the country and how a majority of our people understand the world better. And I don't think it would have happened to me if I didn't go through this. So now my little liberal ideas that I had are completely gone. Completely gone. And I thought that what we call privilege or advantages or a superior culture, and I know we're not allowed to admit it, but you yeah. know we secretly think it.
Yeah.
It is not the cause of disability in the country.
Yeah.
It's the result of disability. My behavior is a result of the privilege of stability. If I grew up in instability, I wouldn't have been like this. Principles mean nothing. Principles are just a privilege of stability, which you didn't cause.
True.
Principles are the cause. It's an illusion.
Yeah.
You think you have principles, you don't. It's just a reaction to the privilege of having had stability.
Yeah.
So now I've completely changed my life. I'm embarrassed to be a liberal because we misunderstand differences.
Yeah.
We disallow differences. And I understand racism. The biggest problem with racism in South Africa is we've made it about race. It's not about race. It's about race has just become a proxy for a shitload of other things,
yeah.
the biggest of which is stability or the lack thereof.
Yeah, it's like, an entrance pass.
Now you take stability away from these people and we will all become like that. So there was a big racial dispute because, of course, the people are the good orators. They will use it as an instigator and people fall for it.
Yeah.
But you will understand very quickly it's not really about race, it's about attitude and small other group dynamics. So the substation over there, when you open it, of course, it looks a bit like a spaghetti because things are blown and thick. But there are three phases, red, yellow, and blue. And you'll see the yellow phase looks like an anaconda that has swallowed sheep because it's so swollen with yeah. overloadedness. So when in this street now that we have rich and poor, poor whites, by the way, rich blacks, people who live here, people who don't live here, people from North Africa, people from wherever, randomly assigned to a phase on the box. So 8 houses are a yellow phase, other yeah. 8 are now blue. When the word went out, the yellow phase are the ones that are blowing the street. Those random people that wouldn't recognize each other in a Pick and Pay became a group.
Yeah.
And the yellow phase sent a delegation to the substation to trip it, because if they can't have power, no one can have power.
Wow.
Suddenly, Ubuntu in reverse. But this is what happens.
Yeah.
You tell those same yellow people, you will go and purposefully take your neighbor's electricity. 6 months ago, they were said, no, don't do these things. But
yeah.
you do these things. So the color difference we must be careful of is not black and white. All of us under our skin have the capacity to be yellow. That nasty, envious thing that will spite you out of envy will take away from others because you don't have. And that's the biggest thing you will watch. So if this grid collapses in South Africa, you can see that your problem will not be electricity. because you can make your own electricity, solar, generator, live without. Your problem will be people.
Yeah.
And I was preparing for an electricity crisis, and I never realized it's going to be a people crisis.
Follow us on Instagram at Chris Jordan Media, or go to my landing page, chrisjordanmedia.net.